the Mexico meeting on trade and international relations. We do have the National Empowerment Fund reporting to us this morning. In my old job, we also have an NEF, which was the National Emergency Fund. And it operated from 1976 up until 1995, when we no longer had need for that in civil society. CEO and your team, we appreciate that you are here. Thank you very much for sharing with us your presentation before the meeting started. Some of us have had an opportunity to browse through that, and we are looking forward to engaging with you on that presentation. Can I just present to members the agenda? The first thing is, honourable members, I wouldn't ask you to stand, but I think that we must just observe a moment of silence for the mother of Lupeka, our secretary, who passed away on Sunday morning. We do trust that she will find eternal rest, and that Lupeka and them will be fine. You know, the African approach to these things is that normally we would want to demonstrate our solidarity with the family by giving them something of monetary value. And I thought that when I sent you the email on Sunday morning, it was hanging because I ran out of data, and it only came through when I came to Parliament yesterday. But I thought at that time of raising with you, honourable members and support staff, the request to say that if you do feel that you'd want to make a financial contribution, how are we going to manage that? Can I propose that if there's any member who wants to do that, welcome, honourable father. We're talking about Lupeka, who have lost his mum. If there's any member who would like to make a financial contribution, we would want to urge you to do so, but we won't say what amount. Can we ask you to pass that on to Grace, who is acting as secretary? Thank you, Grace, for doing that this morning. And then Grace will find a way in which she can transfer it to Rebecca's family. Thank you in anticipation for that. The second thing is that we need to look at apologies. I have not received any. Have you received? No, we have no apologies for the meeting. The third thing that we need to do on the agenda is to say that after the presentation, the members will engage with the CEO on the presentation, and then we will only have one set of minutes, which is the minutes of our last meeting. I think I'm right. Help me, members. We only have one set of minutes to adopt now, which is the minutes of our last meeting. And then I'm going to seek your indulgence just for about three more minutes to let us talk about the plans for the oversight. So I'm asking you if you have anything, Grace, to prepare already psychologically on the plans for the oversight, just so that you can help us. We're going to have a three-minute conversation on that. I don't think I've left out anything. No, it's in the strat plan. Grace says we must have a deliberation. The strat plan is on the program. for both committees. You have last week received the revised program for this committee. Now, the main element of that revised program is the presentation by Trade and Industry on the WTO agreement. Now, I've looked, that agreement is before the NA on Friday the 17th of February, which is this Friday, so it will come to us on the 22nd of February. It's going to be a short presentation. That's the only change on our program. CEO, what we normally request is that you give us an indication of how much time your presentation will take so that we hold back all our comments and questions until such time that you are through, and then make sure that we have enough time to engage with you on that matter. I would want to, before you take the floor, say that the discussion that we're having in Parliament at the moment, and I mean it when I say in Parliament, because it's a joint sitting on the State of the Nation address, is how to deal with radical economic transformation. And we know that the National Empowerment Fund is one of those entities that are playing a pivotal role in terms of dealing with radical economic transformation. So we would want to engage you enthusiastically on that. We give over to you, Mr. Mthethwa, and your team. You are free to introduce your team. I'll introduce the members as we raise questions with you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members of the Select Committee on Trade and International Relations. We are very grateful, Honourable Chair, once again for the privilege to account in respect of the operational performance of the National Empowerment Fund. This time we'll be presenting the salient points of the integrated report for the financial year 2016-2017, is tabled on 30 August last year, as well as on the NES first, second, third quarter financial and non-financial performance from April to December 2016. So, Chairperson, our delegation today comprises the Chairperson of the NES Board of Trustees, Mr. Rakesh Garak, who is a chartered accountant by profession, and an entrepreneur in his own right. Also accompanied by NEF executives, Ms. Innocentia Bule, also a chartered accountant by profession, and she is our CFO, Senator. And then I have Mr. Mziwabantu Daimani, an attorney who manages the NEF legal department. That is the department that is responsible for the drafting of our legal agreements. They are responsible for our mentorship program, turnaround, workout, and restructuring units of the National Empowerment Fund. And I also have Monise, who is in our marketing and comms division, Monise Musiki. And then I'm also with the colleagues of the DCI, I'm sure you know them. So, Honourable Members, one of the highlights that we look forward to sharing with you today is with regard to the work that we have done in partnership with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform to empower farm workers to become entrepreneurs. I'm sure when you read about or listen to the Minister of Dr. DLR talking about this initiative, maybe you may not have associated it with the National Empowerment Fund. We'll also talk about our other day-to-day activities, but this has been the highlight for the last financial year. We're also pleased or prepared to report that the NEF efforts to secure recapitalization has received a new lifeline after President Jacob Zuma recently declared that, and I quote, the NEF needs to be supported in order for the institution to do more to ensure access to finance by Black entrepreneurs, close quote. Therefore, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, the recapitalization of the NEF will also be central to our presentation today, together with the work that we continue to do in advancing the Black Industrialist Program. I'd like to hand over to the Chair because we prepared the presentation a few days ago, but since yesterday there have been some new developments. I'm sure you have seen it in the media as well. So we just wanted to take the board, the select committee through some of the decisions that were taken by the Minister of Trade and Industry and the Minister of EDD yesterday. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Member. I think it may be opportune to flip to page 21 of the slide presentation, where we talk a little bit about the recapitalization and the initiatives that the NEF has been pursuing over the last 3 years. Slide 22 is for information, and 23 is the process and the journey up to this point, where basically traces the history of the capitalization of the NEF since 2004. And to a large extent, the NEF has been a self-funded institution post the initial capital grant and the equity that was raised through the Asonga share scheme. We have what the board has termed called the recycling of capital, where the capital that was initially dispersed, we're now in the process of harvesting those investments and using that to plow back. But we got to a point where it was not sustainable and we needed to get in some fresh capital, and that was the process that we had started some time ago. Over the page on 24, we just set out our current financial position in terms of available cash resources. And the CFO has prepared the table, which basically, if you look to the second column, which talks through to the period for the next next month now, up to the end of March, you'll see that we only have about 260 million rand left for operating purposes and for disbursement. And based on our business plan and our APP for 2016-2017, we were looking to disperse just under R1 billion. We wouldn't have had enough capital to operate in the new financial year. Hence the urgency to get the recapitalization process finalized. I must confirm that yesterday. Let's go to page 26 first, where we talk about the different options. We had started a process with the IDC, that process culminated in called Project Copano, where we analyzed different options in terms of how the IDC and the NEF could operate together. The first option that we considered was the NEF continued as is, which was not a sustainable option, because we would not have any capital to continue operating. The second option that we considered was an arm's length subsidiary, and that's been highlighted deliberately, because that was the option that was finally agreed upon. A closely managed subsidiary of the IDC, where we have not had any autonomy but would really just become part of the IDC. Option four was a divisionalization where the NEF basically became a division of the IDC and continued to operate as part of the IDC management team. And option five was a slightly tighter version of the divisionalization, which would have seen the NEF disappear completely. I must say, after extensive analysis and discussions between ourselves, the IDC, the DTI, and the Department of Economic Development, the second option, arm's length subsidiary, was agreed to as being the most viable. And under that option, the assets of the NEF would be transferred into a new company, which would become a subsidiary of the IDC. There's obviously a process that needs to happen, a legislative process. The NEF is a an institution under created under an Act of Parliament. We have the NEF Act. As part of that process, it would have to go through through cabinet, through legislature, through parliament. An important part of agreeing to that would be an interim or bridging funding facility from the IDC to the NEF. In that way, we could continue operating as the NEF under existing methodology, continuing to report to DTI, while the arm's length subsidiary process was formalized. As I mentioned, and as you had also advised, Chairman, that was finally agreed to yesterday by both ministers as well as our board and the board of the IDC. Hence the announcement. We are glad to say that we're in terms of the structure, the process has been agreed, the composition of the board has been discussed, and the operating model has also been carefully examined. We will obviously have to present an interim plan in terms of how the NEF will operate, will continue operating while the parallel process is underway, we hope that is finalized in, well, we've given commitments to both ministers that those will be finalized in the next 30 days so that we could receive our new capital by the 1st of April to continue operating. Chairman, just to go quickly through slide 28, the NEF and the board and the executive have not been sitting around waiting for this process to occur. We've explored our other options in terms of recapitalization. We approached the Department of Labor, and through the UIF fund, also currently busy with trying to access some of that that capital as well. The PIC, as the fund manager of the UIF, is taken on that process, and we are working with the PIC to see how we could structure such a facility to the NEF. I'll hand back to our CEO. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. So I'll be taking the committee through the work that the NEF has been engaged in over the last 10 years. I don't want the select committee to focus on the merger of the IDC and the NEF. Would like to demonstrate to the committee that we've been hard at work. But also just to add to the few remarks that were made by our chairperson, that the only allocation that we have received, honourable members, over the last 10 years was 2.4 billion. And we have approved transactions that are worth 8.4 billion. Over the last 10 years, we only received 2.4 billion. So the resources that we've been using over the last 10 years were internally generated resources from our interest, from the dividends, and from the sale of shares. You'll remember that the NEF used to own 3% of the MTN stock, so we had to actually offload some of those shares, and this is how we have been self-financing over the last 10 years. So going back to the presentation, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, slide 5 on the NEF mandate, just to remind the committee that the NEF is the only DFI in South Africa which is exclusively mandated to grow black economic participation in South Africa. So we've been the driver and the implementer of the codes of good practice on broad-based black economic empowerment. Slide number 6. The NEF, Honorable Members, is able to advance its work with improving impact year on year because of what we believe to be the high caliber of its investment specialists and support professionals. As an organization with a vibrant future, the average age of our professionals is 36 years. These 160 patriots are the jewel on the crown of the National Empowerment Fund. They are unique and valuable because together they constitute formidable human capital comprising CAs, engineers, admitted attorneys, and professionals from various spheres. So we wouldn't really want to lose this capacity, these resources, the skills base. So we're really hopeful that the minister will be able to conclude the merger between the IDC and the NEF, because you can see from the skills base that I'm referring to that these are the individuals that we had recruited from the likes of your Investec of this world, from your Standard Bank, but you will find a CA at the NEF who will actually understand the developmental mandate that the NEF is seized with. So we wouldn't want to lose this capacity. So as an academy of excellence, our professionals hold diverse qualifications ranging from bachelor's to honors and master's degree. Over 60% of them are women and over 95% are black as defined in the BEE Act. And Honorable Members, because we also understand the needs of our economy and the immense challenges of our communities, over the years we have invested in the training of CAs through the work that we have done with the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants. We've also facilitated training for close to 100 professionals from various companies and sectors of our economy for further training with leading European companies. So what we'll do as part of the bilateral arrangements and agreements between South Africa and some of the European countries is to go into partnerships with some of those countries where we would actually go negotiate on behalf of these young professionals for them to actually give them internships. So the one that comes to mind is a partnership with France, where the French government agreed to actually fund a group of hundreds of young professionals who were then sent to Paris. They went to a business school. They were in the business school for a few months, and then a few companies, banks and asset managers, private equity funds, and some companies, especially for the engineers, also absorbed some of those professionals in their various companies. So this is what we call going beyond the call of duty, because we're in the business of providing funding to black entrepreneurs, but we've gone beyond that to also provide training to our young professionals. So we have not stopped there. As an organization that is alive to the challenges and needs of our society, we can also report, Honorable Members, about the 31 students who have received bursaries from the NEF to study at universities across South Africa. These learners come from rural areas across our country, and many of them are orphans who grew up on social grants. So we literally go to the rural areas to go and identify these students. So all of them were selected purposefully because as high performers, their high school grades average between 70 and 80% for mathematics, English, and physical science. Slide 7 is, honourable members are aware that NEF implements the code of good practice of broad-based black economic empowerment as outlined in the Act, and in this regard the NEF uses a sector-targeted approach in developing its portfolio of investments, and these sectors include the same sectors that are identified in ITEF. So in doing so, we specifically seek to support the initiatives of the GTI, including ITEF, and more broadly, the National Development Plan, And the government priorities that we seek to support include acceleration of economic growth and transformation, and the creation of decent jobs. It also includes infrastructure and rural development, skills transfer, and also human resource development. And on the empowerment dividend, honourable members, you'll be aware that when you talk to the private sector, they always talk about achieving the financial return, or what they would refer to as the IRR. But I do want to inform the members that whilst the NEF would place precedence on commercial viability or financial viability, our mandate also focuses on softer measures in assisting investment applications or projects that come to the NEF for funding. And these will include development indicators such as the black women involvement in the transaction, community involvement, black ownership, which must comply with our product criteria. We look at how many jobs will be created through our investments and the geographic location of the business. These measures, honourable members, form part of the developmental ethos, which the NEF has adopted as the underlying theme of its funding strategy, and together constitute a methodology by which we evaluate the impact of our work. We refer to this methodology as the empowerment dividend. So we would systematically measure the empowerment dividend pre-investment, at a pre-investment level, that is before we can disburse the funds. We want to see where the project is going to be located, job creation, but also post our investment once we have invested, because sometimes people can come and promise us a lot of jobs, but we want to make sure that those jobs will indeed be created. Honourable members, on slide 9 of the Select Committee, these are our life-to-date performance milestones. So from operational inception in 2005 to the end of December 2016, the NEF has approved 839 transactions worth more than $8.5 billion for black empowered businesses across the country. Over $5.6 billion of this is capital that has gone directly into the economy. So what we are arguing here, honourable members, is that we are not looking for a lot of money, because the types of businesses that we support will not come to us and say, I'm one company, or I represent one group of companies, and I want to raise $1 billion for one company from you. With us, what we've been doing, honourable members, is to take $1 billion and you split it and dice it, just to make sure that we empower our black entrepreneurs. So that's what we are looking for. And by the way, honourable members, these companies that we have supported over a period of time are also creating jobs for our economy. So our empowerment is not just your passive shareholding types of empowerment that we used to see during the late 1990s or the early 2000s. This is about black people who are involved in the industrialization of the economy. It's black SMMEs who will come to us and say, I got, a contract with Eskom, or the only thing I'm looking for is maybe 4 trucks. So it starts at that level with your trucking businesses, but we have also supported quite a number of our entrepreneurs who are now involved in the industrialization. So we're looking for $1 billion, $2 billion, and then we will dice it up amongst, I don't know how many black South Africans we have in this country. So we're certain that the portfolio committee will be pleased to know that for 11 years running, the NEF has secured keen external audit opinions, which attest to the organization's integrity and financial management acumen. To date, through its funding milestone, the NEF has supported in excess of 89,000 jobs countrywide. And once the NEF has been properly recapitalized, Honorable Chairperson, this important national priority can only advance higher and faster through the support of more and more black entrepreneurs. So far, NEF funding has supported over 850,000 beneficiaries nationwide, and this can only grow year on year. So recapitalization will also assist or help propel the full commercialization of all the 27 strategic and industrial projects that we have developed in partnership with local and international partners. These are valued at 28.6 billion with the potential to support a further 86,500 jobs. So with our strategic project fund, these 27 projects that I'm referring to, those are the projects that we have started with black entrepreneurs. Some of them will be partnering with their, you know, with their white counterparts, and they will come to the NEF for what we refer to as the venture capital financing. So those projects are the projects that would actually start from scratch. I'm sure you're aware of the hospital that we have just opened here in Cape Town, in the Strand. That investment, even though the investment is now valued at about 2.2 billion rand, because they have a lot of these hospitals all over the country. They got the license from the Department of Health, and obviously they had to operationalize the license and come up with the tangible feasibility studies that would then allow them to open these hospitals. So we started with a very small investment of about 10 million. We increased it to about 40 million, then 80 million. And once the project reached financial close, we're then able to leverage additional funding from the likes of your PICs and also other international private equity funders, Honorable Chairperson. So I do want to highlight this because I believe this is what has been lacking in the country. So a lot of black people will want to get involved in some of these big things, but you need venture capital or seed capital financing that would allow them to take their ideas from just being ideas and all the way to actually finalizing their feasibility study. So we also have the investor education, entrepreneurship training and incubation program, and our regional office network continues to shoulder the very high demand for funding from among black entrepreneurs. We now have offices in all the 9 provinces of the country. And also because our mentorship program is making a positive difference in stabilizing our investees, over 2.1 billion has been collected in repayments, and this has been reinvested into the NES funding mandate. So we are not just throwing money away. Out of the 5.4 billion that has gone into the economy, 2.1 billion has been collected in repayments. So our investees, our companies have actually repaid our funding. And our targeted cost-to-income ratio is between 54% and 58%. And as at 31st December 2016, the ratio achieved was 45%, which is well within our target. So allow me on slide 9 to reiterate that over 2.1 billion has been collected in repayments, and this has been reinvested into the NEF funding mandate. Slides 11 and 12, these are our performance highlights. The year under review of the Chairperson and Honourable Members, in respect of the integrated report 2015 to 2016, was significant in advancing the mandate of the NEF across the board. In terms of providing finance to business ventures, established and managed by black people from April 2015 to March 2016, the NEF approved 127 transactions worth 1.2 billion against a target of 111 deals worth 880 million transactions. So, Chair, you can take the 1.2 billion and divide it by the 127 transactions to actually get the average deal size that we're looking at. So it's really not a lot of money that our black entrepreneurs would be looking for. So even though we have achieved the 1.2 billion, the NEF has the capacity to do more. If we're to be given access to capital, we believe that we would be able to even achieve about 2 billion rands per annum. So I won't take you through all the other key highlights. This is for your bedtime reading. So the NEF unencumbered cash, which the chair was referring to, is the cash that is immediately available to the NEF for new approval that currently stands at about 260 million. That's what we have in our kitty at the moment. So what this means, honourable members, is that the NEF lending operations are left with 2 months because its current capital will run dry by the end of March, and you can imagine what will happen to our entrepreneurs who actually knock on our doors on a daily basis. As I said, we have done 127 transactions, and this is not enough given the kind of demand that we're dealing with at the moment. Our portfolio collections for the year amount to 541 million, which is 20% above 2015 receipts. Despite our activist approach in maximizing the NEF support for businesses that are owned and managed by black women entrepreneurs, we only reached about 30%. So 30% of our funding went to women-owned enterprises, and would like to increase this target to reach 40% by the end of this financial year. Not this financial year, the next financial year. So we'll also continue to work with the organizations representing women in business to narrow this gap, because black women empowerment remains a key priority of the NEF. I won't talk about our achievements in the regional offices. This is for your bedtime reading, collections and litigation. But if the honorable members have questions, we've just highlighted these issues for your information purposes. Slide 14 to 15. This will be our performance year to date. Already we have approved 69 deals that are worth 927 million against a target of 103 deals worth 750 million. So it has come down from the 1.2 billion that we had achieved in the last financial year because of the lack of recapitalization of funding. This is the global overview of the South African economy. Can you go to that slide, Mwemise? I'm sure the board have had this many times, so I won't take you through the macroeconomic environment. Slide 18. It talks about some of the challenges that we've been faced with as an organization, given the current macroeconomic conditions that we're finding ourselves in. So what the foregoing economic climate calls for, Chair, is the heightened post-investment monitoring for the NEF. So our post-investment unit reports that investee companies are now requesting moratoriums, reduced installments, and extension of loan tenures because of the difficult macroeconomic conditions that they find themselves in. So 5 of the 7 companies that were transferred to our turnaround workouts and the restructuring units are in the manufacturing and construction sectors. This is where we have actually experienced quite a lot of challenges. Slide 19 to 20 we just wanted to give you a glimpse of some of the transactions that we are referring to, honorable members. So with the analysis in mind, we are now able to embrace opportunities that have far-reaching benefits for entrepreneurs and communities. We are therefore pleased, honorable members, to report to the Select Committee that in the Northwest Province, the Babo Bamukhale traditional community in Marikana have secured 5-year contracts with Lonmin Platinum in transactions that will benefit over 50,000 beneficiaries. The community's investment arm has been awarded a contract to transport Lonmin's mineral ore in a multi-million transaction that will support 45 direct jobs. The second contract is for the transportation of Lonmin's employees, and this will require 84 buses in order to shuttle 20,000 employees per day. The anticipated revenue runs into mega millions, honorable members, and is expected to support 180 additional jobs in the Marikana area. The third contract provided by Lonmin to the Marikana community is for the supply of personal protective equipment to employees in the company's mining operations in Marikana, Limpopo, and Gauteng, for which 60 jobs will be created. The NEF intervention has resulted in the approval of a facility of 96 million rand, and at this point, 30 million has already been dispersed, but the total facility has been approved, with more to follow subject to the fulfillment of milestones. We are also mindful of the concerns raised by the former public protector when she met with the community of Babo Bamukhale to provide a preliminary report on her investigations, but we are excited about the involvement of the NEF in this particular project and the engagements that we've been having with the community. Honorable members, because in the past, we've been informed that for the last 20 years before we got involved, some of the communities didn't even understand their rights, their voting rights in the projects, but now the NEF is going to be playing that role of, advisory to the community. So far we have invested the 100 million and we're very excited about the benefits that will accrue to the community. So in the past, the community was just a passive shareholder in Lonmin. So for the first time now, they are giving them like tangible contracts that are supposed to be managed and operated by the local community, and the NEF is a partner in this. So on slide 21 to 22, a chairperson that was also around the recapitalization. I don't think I have to go through that because the chair has already done that. Project Boban on slide 26, we've done that. Our engagements with the UIF will be on slide 28. So can I go to the project that we're doing with the Department of Rural Dr. DLR? So this is slide 29, honorable members. So honorable members and honorable chair, one of the NEF's proudest achievements for the year under review is the NEF partnership with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. This came about after Honorable Minister Gugile Ngwindi invited the NEF to become a partner in the implementation of the program called the Strengthening of Relative Rights of People Working the Land, also known as the 50-50 Project. Among the milestones discussed earlier, there were several factors that distinguished the NEF as a worthy partner in the project, and these include the following. So this is why Minister Ngwindi approached the NEF. Firstly, that the NEF has a track record of success in structuring startups, expansion, and equity acquisition deals. Secondly, with a dedicated rural and community development fund, the NEF possesses consummate expertise in unlocking economic value in peri-urban and rural areas. Third, the NEF is highly proficient in facilitating community and worker ownership and participation in BEE transactions. So our skills include providing entrepreneurial training, incubation support, mentoring, drawing up social and labor plans for the communities, and broadly safeguarding the interests of communities and workers in the businesses we invest or we get involved in. So these are the attributes that the minister was looking for. There are a number of key strategic and patriotic considerations that attracted the NEF to this partnership. First and foremost, the Department of Rural Development plays an important role. You know about them, and that this would actually allow us to create jobs, but it would allow these farm workers to actually own some of the farms for the first time, the farms that they've been working on for many, many decades. So already we can point to several milestones since the partnership began in January last year, honorable members, ranging from funds, disbursements, and agreements that will be signed following negotiations that have been facilitated by the NEF with the farmers. In Limpopo, 6 beneficiaries will become shareholders in a game farm valued at 21 million rand. In the Eastern Cape, a total 29.5 million has been disbursed to empower 40 farm workers to become co-owners in a farm that grows and processes pineapples. In the Eastern Cape, 58 farm workers.
Sorry, CEO. Like, the figures that you're giving are very important for us here in the province. In the slide, it says 10.5, you said 29.5. I'm sure our colleagues in the province are looking at those closely.
How much is that one?
Okay, my apologies.
So in the Eastern Cape, it's 10.5 million has been dispersed to empower 40 farm workers to become co-owners in a farm that grows and processes pineapples. In the Eastern Cape, 58 farm workers sent to become co-owners in a citrus farm valued at over 38 million rand once the necessary agreements have been signed. Also in the Eastern Cape, 45 workers are now part owners of a farm valued at 65 million rand. The vineyards specialize in wine production. In Limpopo, the agreement has been signed to enable 26 workers to co-own a game farm valued at 39.8 million. In KwaZulu-Natal, a disbursement of 33 million has empowered 55 workers to co-own a farm that specializes in the production of sugar cane and timber. In the Western Cape, 18 permanent and 180 seasonal farm workers will co-own a 73.5 million farm specializing in the production, slice, and dice of table bread and vegetables once the applicable agreements are signed, but we have finalized all of these transactions. In cattle farming, we can point to the Northwest, where 10 workers tend to be shareholders in a farm valued at 55.1 million. In Gauteng, 102 employees will soon become employers once agreements are signed to empower them to co-own a hemp farm valued at 30.2 million. And right here in the Western Cape, honorable members, 56 employees will be shareholders when the agreement is signed for them to co-own a wine grape farm priced at 160.4 million. So the scope of the NEF's work in helping to take these objectives forward has been wide-ranging. Firstly, we have undertaken due diligence investigations into the project in order to determine the value and commercial viability of the businesses. The department, honorable members, were telling us that in the past, because of the lack of skills in terms of conducting these due diligences, some of the farms were overpriced. So because they didn't have the technical skills that our CAs and lawyers have, sometimes they wouldn't actually know what the fair value of that particular project was. So this is why they the, so in most of our discussions, we've actually been able to reduce the fair market values of the funds that are being sold to our people. So in the rest, Chair, I think that one is self-explanatory. And I will stop here. Chair, the rest is for the members' bedtime reading. I think I've gone through most of the highlights for the last 10 years and for the last financial year, and also just to appraise the members on where we are in terms of our performance in this financial year. The rest is issues that we have discussed with the Parliamentary Committee in the past. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you very much, CEO, for that very helpful presentation. Can I request on slide 37, because it also relates to provinces, that you take us through that, if you don't mind? The negotiations in progress.
Oh, okay. Mzee, do you want to take that?
Thank you, Peter. So on slide 37, these are the transactions that we are currently negotiating in the provinces with various stakeholders. So these negotiations are at various stages. Some of them we have concluded the negotiations, but once a transaction has been negotiated and structured, it goes through the approval process with the department where the prices get finalized. And also one of the key components of that negotiation is how much the other partner, because this is a 50-50 transaction, so we require the other partner to also make a contribution towards the business for their 50% of their shareholding. So that negotiation does take place during this process. So they are at various stages of negotiations. Some of them would be at a stage where we have signed agreements, but we have not dispersed because we are still meeting conditions precedent. The various conditions precedent that we look at is the land has to be transferred into the name of the state, and also the company that is going to operate the business has to be formed and be appropriately capitalized, and we buy the necessary assets and we firm up the offtakes from the people that are going to buying the products of these farms, because one of the key components of this program is that they have to be economically viable. So we assist them in ensuring that they have agreements with various partners that will buy their products. So we've got the farms that are listed on that particular slide. Trying to look through them. Yes, I think, Chair, what we can say is that they're at various stages of negotiation at the moment.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, it's time for us to engage with the presentation. Just before I do that, we have MC sitting right here opposite me. She is here representing the Parliamentary Liaison Office. Sir Raj had to go to the hospital last night, and she's in hospital as we speak. But then MC is sitting in for her at this meeting. So the apologies. Can we just note the apology of Sir Raj there? I note Honourable Ntimunya, Honourable Khai, Honourable Ntebe, in that sequence. Let's have three hands at the time. Honourable Ntimunya is from Mpumalanga, Honourable Khai is from the Eastern Cape, and Honourable Ntebe is from the Northwest. Honourable Ntimunya.
To say thank you, Chair. First, maybe we should welcome the report by the NEF. It's commendable the job that you have done so far, but it's always difficult, Chair, to read a report in isolation from the APPs, because you don't know how to gauge then progress made as per the target that you would have set for yourself for the financial year. But that is not a blame to the entity, but maybe a lesson for the future. The NDP set certain goals, and I hope you do extrapolate your own mandate out of the NDP, that of creating the 11,000 jobs by the year 2030. And again, it's the dilemma that I've just made reference to, that I'm here, I'm suffering from that. What then becomes your contribution towards the 11 million jobs that we want to create by 2015 out of your black industrialist or black small entrepreneurs that you are creating out of your program and mandate? And would you, based on your information, suggest that are you on course? Will you achieve your target of the jobs as a national issue by 2030? That part of the NDP that is relevant to you as your mandate. Your funding criteria, if you could a little bit explain to us, how is it different from that of commercial banks? Because from where I'm sitting, there's no point of creating an FDI whose funding criteria is exactly the same of that of a commercial bank. What then becomes the point? The program that you are doing is almost similar to the Black Industrialist program of the DTI. I'm not sure if it's delegated to you. Please pardon my ignorance if that is the case. But if it's not delegated to you, then it's a separate program of the DTI, run by DTI internally or by some other entity of the DTI. How do you compare your programs and your checks and balances to avoid double dipping? Because some people may benefit out of another program and come to benefit again out of you. When we've got poverty engulfing the country so much and we need to see progress, if people, same people, one and the same group of people would come and dip from this program and dip from another program and so on and so on, and then we have a problem, then we're chasing a moving target that will never be met at some point. Can I be clarified on that one? Chairperson, I know it may not come out of an annual report, but I still need to get a scientific impact analysis. How did NEF impact on the economy of the country, and how do you hope to impact in the future? We are made to understand that our economy is growing at 1.1%. What is your contribution to improve that economic growth of the country as NEF? Because I think that is actually at the core of your mandate as well. The South Africa has got three provinces that in the main are poverty stricken: Limpopo, Eastern Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal. And I am very impressed with the impact you have made in those provinces. But I see you record 2% of investment in Limpopo, when it's also, I'm not sure if my reading is correct, when actually it's one of the provinces that is identified as a province that is poverty-stricken. What is your explanation on that one? Your programs of entrepreneurship, enterprise development, training, and so on, what is your criteria? How do you identify these beneficiaries that you train, and at what intervals? Chairperson, my last comment is that my observation, I'm a rural boy, I come from a village. The small developments that we have, especially in the former homelands, for instance, if I can make an example of a shopping complex, it's still a shopping complex that is owned by white people from Johannesburg. how do we hope to see people of Wendebele benefiting out of an economic activity that happened in their doorfront, and they are not beneficiaries, they are expected to be workers and be workers all the time, to live out of their labor for life, and that is the problem to me. What then becomes the role of the NEF? And I see in your roadshow that you do, especially when it comes to Mpumalanga, you've done Delmas, you've done Emalahleni, Witbank, you've done Middelburg, and so on. To me, at least some economic activity is happening there. But then what becomes your role in terms of innovating economic activity where there's actually nothing existing, like the former Wendebele, the villages, typical villages that I'm talking about? Because at least if you talk Denmark, if you talk Middelburg, Witbank, there's actually some economic activities. There are people who are blatantly pushed by apartheid system to the former homeland, and they still have to travel between their homelands and Pretoria to seek jobs. And 20 years into democracy, there's not even a wink of an eye in terms of some economic activity happening there. Is that not your mandate? If it's your mandate, well, what are you doing about it?
Thank you. That was at least 5 questions. Honorable Khan.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Let me also to thank the NEF, the CEO, and the Chairperson for the presentation. Perhaps let me just say, Honorable Mtumnyunye has asked most of the questions that I've noted, but it's a question of emphasis as well. Perhaps let me start with the issue of the mentor. Is it a mentor or just a subsidiary of IDC? Does it mean that the structure of NEF, the board, and the operation will be at ease going to the mentor, or there's going to be the change with regard to the board, with regard to the operational structure? But also, what programs are you going to take with you, and which ones are going to be left with DTI? For example, the issue that is raised by Honorable Mtinyumunye on the issue of black industrial. Are you going together to the new entity with that kind of a program, or does it remain with DTI? But also, what is the security of those that are currently employed by the NEF, if you are to match. Also, going to back to the issue of the 50-50, I wish we could perhaps have some details, not final details, with regard to these agreements between workers, or this 50-50 arrangement. What does the agreement entail? Because I'm just concerned about the issue of paying back the money to the NEF, the ability of the workers to be able to pay back. What if they are unable to pay back? But also, what happens if those farms, because of other external factors like drought and everything else, are not viable? What happens to the money that has been invested in those funds? The other issue that I wanted to make emphasis on is this issue of the DFI, whether it's developmental in its approach or is it commercial. I think it's an issue that we also asked yesterday when we're dealing with the small development. They also have an entity called CIFA, which is to assist small businesses. But the minister openly told us that the interest is even more than what the commercial banks are charging. What is the situation with the NEF? I've got an example. There's a person in the Eastern Cape who I know was assisted by NEF in a construction company. Assisted, I think it was 35 million. NEF paid the previous owner 30 million and kept 5 million so that the previous owner can mentor, train if the job, I mean the business is viable, then he will still get, I think there's something that is called, there's a profit clause in that kind of an arrangement. It happened that this business could not be viable, and the owner, the new owner, struggled because of this structuring of the payment. So if you could also perhaps highlight, CEO, how is the repayment restructured for, because this is meant to assist, as you said, black people. But also, same example, this person is in the construction industry. He makes sure that he meets the legal requirement of the industry. For example, he has the SABS approved bricks, and because of that, they are a bit expensive compared to others that are not SABS approved, and that is affecting his business, because anyone else can just go and buy a cheaper bricks. So I don't know that, but also I think it's a matter that we should perhaps as members raise with the Department of Human Settlements, so that they don't allow, especially the RDP houses, to be built with these cheaper bricks, in the process affecting those that are complying with the legal requirements of having SABS approved, SABC approved legal requirements. So I think those are the issues, Chair. But also the last one is the incubation program. How different is it from the incubation program that is still with the DTI, but that is supposed to be also moved to the small business development? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honourable High, I would appeal that in fairness, just the first question that you raise about the NEF transfer to the IDC, the programs that they will take with them, and the question of job security. The cabinet is sitting now to discuss those things. They won't have the final say on that. I would allow them to speak on it, but no. Even if there is a process, they can't share it with us until such time that cabinet is their bosses. I'm saying that they can answer. But I will understand if they don't give you a fully satisfactory answer, because they will depend upon the decisions. You yourself raised it earlier, that it was something that just happened yesterday with the two ministers, Patel and
they have been involved in that in the process.
Yeah, so they will share that with us. Honourable Ntebe, let's have you as the last one for this round.
I think I must just be fair. The majority of the issues that I wanted to raise were covered by Honourable High, except to impress CEO that in our interaction with Small Business Department, what comes out very loud was that there's inability for a cohesion around all other departments that are meant to complement each other. The issue of incubation says where the DTI and therefore small businesses cannot be incubated, and if the NEF has a responsibility, sole responsibility, to drive and champion BEE, and we don't see that expression becoming very clear, the issue of proportionate investment in the disbursement of the funds that you have. It's simple, CEO. And I think Honorable Khai has impressed. Maybe I should allow them to answer first and Chair, and I'll come. But in my slide, on slide 32, Northwest, under Northwest Louis Mayer Farm, it's given 28 million. You said 55. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let give you an opportunity to respond. Maybe, CEO, because you have it there, we have the Northwest one, then we can deal with that one and then start
You can take it in any sequence that you want. Can we say that we try and give you, say, 7 minutes, 10 minutes to respond to all of them?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. So how do I deal with the questions that were raised by Honorable Mtimoni?
You deal with them within the 10 minutes.
But he's not here.
I know.
Oh, no.
It's not safe. Okay, let me start with Honorable.
He's still not in
them. Oh.
Honorable Mtimoni. And Jimunia's secretary came to drop an envelope to him while he was talking, and he's throwing out.
Okay. I'll start with Honorable Mtimoni because. So, Honorable Mtimoni. So, you wanted to understand how is our how. Do we actually assess our performance versus the APP testing targets? So we submit our targets to the DTI on an annual basis, and on a quarterly basis we report on our performance against the targets to the DTI and to Parliament as well. So when I was running through those, you know, the significant milestones slides, it would say, as I was doing it, the target was so much, and this is what we have achieved. So I picked up on 10 of the indicators that the DTI would monitor on a quarterly basis. So the targets were there. And then you were also making reference to the NDP objectives, and more specifically the objective of creating 11 million jobs by 2030. Yes, so you wanted to actually see our performance in relation to those broad strategic objectives that were set out in the document. You also wanted to know, because I want to combine your this question with your fourth question, where you wanted to understand whether we've done any scientific impact analysis just to try and measure our contribution in terms of, you know, achieving the economic growth objectives that set out in the NDP or any of our government policies. Honourable Member, I really think there's a disjuncture here because you are asking the NEF to respond to how, I will respond to the question. It's an issue that I've raised with my minister as well to say we're talking 11 million jobs, but this committee has never really, asked the NEF or the DTI or the National Treasury about how we're going to recapitalize the NEF. So I've told the committee that on an annual, we've been self-financing for the last 5 years. There was no money. But as an honorable member, I don't remember you raising that as an issue to say, because if you want us to make this huge contribution, if you want to achieve radical economic transformation, it has to be funded. We will never be able to make a contribution in a vacuum if there is no proper or appropriate recapitalization of the NEF. All of these other things, if we had been properly capitalized, it was going to be very easy for us to actually respond directly. But we've been self-financing, would go to Minister Nkwinde and say, Minister, I have these skills, what can I do for you? Because there was no money. So I'm just saying this is the context within which you are raising this question. But if we were an entity maybe that was sitting on an NAV of about even 20 billion to say you give the NEF, obviously not in one tranche, you say 20 billion will actually go towards supporting black people in this country, we would be having another conversation today. You have given us 1 billion per annum because you approved our strategic plans as well. We are saying take this 1 billion, dice it up amongst if we're 56 million people in South Africa are saying take 1 billion, dice it up amongst 48 million people. Take it to all the provinces, the 1 billion. So I'm just saying this is the dilemma we are faced with, 1 billion. Funding criteria or our pricing policy, when I was doing the presentation, there's a slide that talks to our developmental impact that we'd like to achieve in the investments that we have done. So one of those is job creation. So before we can make any investment, we actually want to see how many jobs will be created. So in a formal pricing, in a normal pricing policy for a normal bank, there's a formula for actually arriving at a price. So we'll follow that formula, but because we are a development financier, you will actually discount it by factoring all of the developmental objects. So let's say you bring a transaction to us, we're going to charge prime plus 2%. But because you have involved women, because it's in a rural area, so that's a discount. So you discount up until you come up with a price. If, let's say, in one project you'd be having all of those developmental issues that I've mentioned, you may actually end up with a price that will give you prime minus 1% or prime minus 2. So it depends, when you bring a project to us, on how much developmental impact you're going to have through that particular investment. So it's not one single price. The price will vary from one sector to another because there will be risk factors that you have to factor in your pricing model and the developmental impact of what you'll be looking at. On the Black Industrialist Program, if it has been delegated to the NEF, we started the Black Industrialist Program, by the way. We've been working on it. So when the previous Deputy Minister of Trade and Industry came up with the concept, he took it from us. We called it the Strategic Project Fund. That is where we have developed those 28 projects I was referring to earlier that are valued at about 24 billion rand. So we've been doing it for the last 10 years. We came up with the concept, but then the Minister, Deputy Minister of the DTI, liked the concept, and then he actually developed it into what is known today as the Black Industrialist Program. So how do you avoid double dipping? The DTI is running with the program. When there is this huge demand, if we are expected to create 11 million jobs as a country, I wouldn't worry too much about double dipping, because in fact, in these projects, we want to leverage private sector financing into the projects as well. That has been our role. So we don't hold it and say this is our program because any funds that are available. So in one project, if I can just use it as an example, let me use the example of the hospitals that I was referring to earlier. We started as the NEF, but because the project just got bigger and bigger, we went to the PIC, the PIC invested in the project, we went to the international funders as well, because when you talk about foreign direct investment, we're saying let's come up with projects, let's come up with the feasibility studies, because if we don't have the feasibility studies, there will be no foreign direct investment. Investors are looking for tangible things or tangible projects that they can invest in. So I'm saying, from where I sit, I would actually want to the committee to say to the country, let's support this Black Industrialist Program, all of us, and not say it's going to be the preserve of the DTI, because they won't have the capacity, the NEF won't have the capacity if you look at the 11 million jobs that we're supposed to create by 2030. 2% of investment in Limpopo. It goes back to what I said earlier in my opening remarks. If we had the funds, we would be doing many projects in all of these provinces. So what we've been doing is to go to the provinces and say, we'll engage with the provincial governments and departments and say to them, can you assist us to identify the key sectors where we could work together. So it depends on the partnership that the NEF has with the various provinces. So sometimes we've been lucky in that those provincial governments, the NEF only has about 160 people, by the way. So with 160 people, you can do so much. So we'll go to the provincial governments and say, you have 10,000 people who work for you in government. Can you ask them to assist us in identifying those investment opportunities? So the resources, that is the challenge that we have, in that we are supposed to cover the whole country with only 160 individuals. But it doesn't mean that we have stopped trying. We'll keep on trying. My colleagues will talk to the entrepreneurship training. On the shopping malls, if you look at our shopping mall portfolio of investments, especially the ones that we're doing in the rural areas, I know we have one in Kumbu, we've done one in Kumbu, we have one in Umlazi, we have the Orange Farm. It's a strange, observation that we are making. Those are our best performing assets in our investment portfolio. And what is good about the ownership model is that the community will have a stake in the shopping malls as well. In fact, in all the shopping malls that we've done in the past, the community will have ownership in it. So the shopping mall, story for South Africa, it's a sad one in that you can't say also as a country that you won't allow the rural communities to actually start, create and own the shopping malls because they want them. Initially we have said no, we don't want to invest in the shopping malls because we thought it was going to kill the small entrepreneurs, it was going to kill the entrepreneurial spirit that we're observing from some of the rural communities. But if you don't do it in partnership with the communities, the big guys will come, your Pick and Pays and all the major banks, they will actually go and locate there. So we've funded about, how many shopping malls is it?
About eight,
which are performing extremely well. We're getting our money back. The Honourable Chair has already dealt with this issue of whether on the merger between for, I'm responding to Honourable Khai. So some of the detail will come back to the committee, because for now what the ministers were signing on yesterday were just broad statements of intent. So they've asked the team, there's a task team that was set up to look into all of the details that you are asking about. So we'll come back and report to the committee when the Honourable Chair invites us. The agreements between workers and owners, our General Counsel will respond to that, whether the DFI's approach is developmental or commercial. I thought I went to a great length of trying to explain our approach in terms of doing our investments. Remember when I was saying a commercial bank, or if you are an investment banker, we'll be talking about how much IRR do I want to get from this project. So I said, as the NEF, we even came up with a concept which we refer to as the empowerment dividend. The empowerment dividend concept has replaced what we are used to, the financial return. So if you are a banker, you want to see the IRR. But with us, we're saying we want to see how many jobs, and then we'll come up with a price. And the price will be discounted by the amount of developmental impact that you would have achieved in one project. Incubation programs, that there's no coercion. We need a plethora of these things, Honorable Chair. For me, that's my view. The incubation programs that we have, because sometimes, let's say you have an entity, all they want to do is start a trucking company. So if you don't have your own incubation program where you can quickly take them through, we even call mentors, our mentors are usually people who have worked, let's say it's trucking, so retired South Africans who have worked in the logistics business before. So they will sit with these guys. They just want to drive four trucks. They want to move coal from the mines to the Eskom power plants. That's all they want to do. So you don't want them to wait. They come to us and then you refer them to somebody else. It takes another 6 months or a year before they can, you see what I mean? So I would say, it's my plea to you, is that encourage as many of these things as possible. In that way, I've seen it working in China. In that way, we'd be able to achieve the radical economic transformation that we're talking about. But if we're going to say the NEF is doing it, therefore so-and-so should not, or even the private sector, I don't think we'll get to where we want to be by 2030. It's my honest view. Okay, thank you. And then I will ask my colleague Pumzi to talk to slide 32 and then the entrepreneurship development program.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
On slide 32, regarding the Louis Mayer transaction. So on the slides, we show 28 million rand as being the value of the transaction. The actual value of the transaction is 55 million rand. The 28 million rand was the acquisition price of the land. So what happens, we do a transaction in phases. So phase one was 28 million rand, but phase two would be to capitalize the business, to buy assets, to buy the biological assets, to actually make it a commercial enterprise. But the balance of the funds have not been invested yet, because we do transactions in tranches. The first tranche would be the acquisition of the land and the transfer of the land, because the principle with all these transactions is that the land must be owned by the state. So there would be the process of transferring the land into the name of the government, because the key to this program is the security of tenure. This land must never be used by the previous owners who are core owners of the actual business, or by this, we're protecting the very same people so that they do not use this land, they do not sell it, or they do not dispose of it, because it would be in the name of the state. They have the right to occupy that land and use it economically. So that is why there is that difference between the two numbers there. So in terms of the repayment, how we structure these transactions is that because the land is going into the name of the state, so the land is being bought by the government, so that money does not get repayable, the land acquisition price. What happens is that the government leases this land back to the businesses, including the workers, at a nominal amount. So it's not a normal commercial lease, but we do want the people to be accountable for the use of the land, which is why there is a lease agreement with a rental in it. So what gets repayable is what gets invested as working capital for the business, because those assets and also those businesses, we do want them to be commercially viable. Even there, the terms are concessionary, because these loans are actually interest-free, and the terms, they are not the normal terms. So if you would get a loan for 5 years in a bank, you'll get 15 years to repay it. And we actually take into consideration issues like drought and so on. So the terms of the actual loans are actually structured such that they are to the benefit of the actual workers to make sure that these farms are productively used. One of the reasons why we do that is to ensure that the people work the land, because if someone has no obligation, we found that in the past those farms get run down very quickly. But if someone knows that they have to be accountable for the use of that land and ensuring that it's economically viable, then they would wake up in the morning and make sure that they are productive. Also, in terms of the employees, because now there is a transition, because previously they had the employer who was the superior, and they were the employees who were accountable to that. Now, all of a sudden, they get told that they're at the same level. So taking them to that stage where they actually understand what it means to be co-owners and what it means now that they're going to be sitting in the boardroom together with their former employer and negotiating business terms, we always ensure that there is actually a community representative which has a certain level of understanding of business principles, preferably someone from that particular community who is a business person already, who will represent the community at board level and also at operations, to ensure that, because people, it takes a long time for them to actually understand that they're no longer now just employees in that particular business. And also, as an organization, we deploy board members in these businesses to ensure that the rights of the employees are protected, to ensure that the economic interests and the targets that we've set are achieved in the various businesses. Mr. Mtetwa,
we would want to appeal that you show the colleagues that has to speak next, and I see the colleague sitting next to you also want to speak, because you are responding to the questions.
Yes, yes.
No, he's not. He's not one of us here.
I'll see you.
That's why I'm asking you to point. What we'll do after you've get, because there's still one point from the NAF, actually two. The one is on the entrepreneurship training. I think you've partly dealt with it. I don't know if you want to go further on it. You said you'll point it to somebody. If you say you dealt with it, you're happy.
Yeah.
Okay. Then the other one was the question that was raised by Honorable Timunya on what has been your impact. But then let's, after that, allow the two colleagues from DTI to then speak here and on the corner. We know you from DTI.
You want to come in first?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Good morning. I thought maybe I'll just add on 2 points just to assist there, or to add on what the NEF has presented already. The first point will be on the black industrialism, and the other one will be on the incubation program.
Please just help us with your designation.
Thank you, sir. My name is Sipho Zikode. I'm from the DTI. I'm the Deputy Director General, responsible for special economic zones and economic transformation programs within the DTI. On the black industrial, I just want to add that I think, the view here is to enable the whole economy to implement the black industrial program. The black industrial program can never rely on DTI and the DFIs, for it to be successful. We want to use government and the state-owned enterprises and the state organs to catalyze the whole program so that the whole economy then takes it up. That is why, if you look at it, there is a grant that is provided by the Department of Trade and Industry, but then it works together with the DFIs like NEF and also others like IDC, Land Bank, PIC, although at the moment PIC is not yet playing the big role, to support the development of this black industry. So that's one component, the financial support. But then you also have the non-financial support, where we are teaming up with the state-owned companies, to open up markets through their procurement system to give business to these black industrialists. So that's non-financial support, which is in addition to the financial support component. But we are also now looking at the codes of good practice. How do we further strengthen the cause of good practice so that the general economy now focuses on supporting the black industrialist through the supplier development and enterprise development. As you know, in 2013, the law itself was amended, the BEE law, and then the codes of good practice were amended to emphasize on things like supplier development and enterprise development. When these companies support small suppliers and support the development of enterprise, they get more points now, so which is a carrot for them. But we are working with the minister now. We will be amending the codes again to specifically prescribe on the black industrialist. If you support a black industrialist, as it has been described in the policy, then you're going to get more points in your scorecard. These are the efforts of government to really try to catalyze the economy to support the black industrialist. And then on the incubation, I think just to add on the CEO's presentation there, you know, it all started some 6-7 years ago when the Minister of Trade and Industry said, you know, our economy is about a quarter of the Brazilian economy, and the Brazilian economy, we are always, you know, benchmarking ourselves and against it. And these people, they have about 4,000 incubators, the Brazilian economy. So the minister said, no, guys, that's fine. At that time, I think FIDA was, I think FIDA had about 31 incubators. So the minister said, no, but we have to target 1,000, if that's the case, if we want to, you know, comparatively compete with Brazil on that score. So the idea was we'll target to have about 1,000. But then we said by 2020, the target must be about 400, okay? FIDA was still under DCI at that time. And we then decided that FIDA alone cannot achieve these numbers, you know, looking at the history of development of incubators. So the DCI established another incubator program within it, which is the individual support program, you know. That's to fast track things, like you is saying that you need to make many of these things. They say many denarii or something like that. So we have the incubator support program within the DTI. Then as we know, 2014, you know, there was a new ministry established, a new department of small business, and FIDA was transferred together with its own incubation. But DTI decided that that doesn't mean that now we have to stop with this one. We have to continue. And even the institutions reporting under DTI have to support the incubation program because that's good for the economy. And that's why even now, Chair, we are looking at that program to strengthen it so that it looks at the issues of supplier development, issues of supporting small industries and small enterprises within the industrial parks, within the SEZ. How do we foster the development of suppliers now into these big multinationals, big industries, using incubation support, using organizations like FIDA, using organizations like NEF to further support, you know, the program, because it's good for the development of the economy. So I thought maybe I would just support the presentation with these viewers. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. You're welcome. Please.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to all the honourable colleagues. I think I also just wanted to support the point that my colleague made, Mr. Zikori, about the incubation. Chair, I think when we were doing this assessment, I think we also segmented the market and realized that what the incubation drive that SEED is supporting is different to the one that the NEF is supporting. So it's not... there's not a case of double dipping because the customers that go to CEDA versus those that go to the NEF are in different stages. Yes, they all qualify, I think, under the definition of a small business, but
but there would be nuances. Somebody has a turnover of 1 million versus somebody has a turnover of 50 million. And so those were some of the considerations that I think we had also looked at that time. But then, Chair, I think just to respond to the question about, I think it's Honourable Mutumunye, about the performance and the checking of the targets. There's a joint DTI team comprising of the line divisions and the governance units that are the entity oversight. They look at all of the quarterly reports, and we actually assess independently whether they've met their targets or not. And where there's disagreement, I think there's an engagement with the public entity. We also rely on the auditor reports. The auditor general also audits performance information. So I think there's a very robust process that exists. And where Minister feels that he's looked at all of the views, but he still feels they haven't been on target, he then formally communicates that to the board and the CEOs, indicating that this is his percentage. He sees them at performing at this percentage, and he'd like remedial action in terms of getting up to speed, and that happens every quarter. Thank you, Chair.
I think the point is important. I know it's your honourable lord, because, Honourable Montana, in terms of our oversight plan, what we're hearing from DTI is that large number of entities, remember the list that has been shared with us by Tupaca, that there is a quarterly meeting of the management in the DTI where they look at all these entities with the minister and they do the assessment. And whenever they report to us, we are free to raise it with DTI, but also to raise it with the entities. For us, in terms of our work, what is important is that we can't bring all those entities to the committee within one calendar year. So we'll have to look at how do we then, when we engage DTI, raise that with them. Remember when we did our last oversight, DTI took a particular program, and in that meeting there in Pretoria, spoke to us on that particular program, and then we went to go look practically at what they're saying in the program is it being implemented. Let's give you a last word, go to the CEO. I'm worried about our time, but because I see there's still some members who want to come for a second round of questions. Let's have her just bring in her last word, CEO, and then you.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, just a correction. Minister doesn't sit quarterly with the entities. The DTI team would do that. Minister meets annually with the chairpersons and the executive team to look at the strategy, to look at oversight. But he certainly gets all of the reports on a quarterly basis. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wanted to go back to the issues that you were referring to, the issues that we have not addressed so far. And I would like to take the honourable members to slide number 58 that talks about our investor education program, slide 58. So if you look at our investor education campaign, it has actually reached over 30,000 black South Africans in the villages and townships, and these are all the areas we've been to in the past. So some of it will come from, even the members of parliament will say, I'm addressing a group of, black entrepreneurs in a village called Hamalake. CEO, can you send your representatives? I want them to come and just educate people about some of these investment opportunities. What can they do in the rural, villages? So we have developed something, it's like, teaching notes. So when we go to a village, we know exactly that you have to educate people about how to save and invest. You have to educate them about the business skills, how to prepare a business plan. You know, then they will talk to us and say, oh, I want to start, or we want to start small things like a vegetable garden, we want to supply Pick and Pay, but we don't even know where to go if we're, to be exposed to Pick and Pay. How do we get involved in those discussions? But in most instances, the NEF will lead the discussions. So this is, we've been to. If we had the capacity, Honorable Chair,
we would have, if we had more than 160 people, we would have done a lot more than what is on this page. Oh, okay, there's some more that you couldn't fit on the slide here. Other villages that don't appear on the slide, but we can provide the committee with. But some of the MPs know that it doesn't matter whether you are ANC or DA, they would say to us they want to work with us in terms of driving this program forward. So we're not just doing it for just one party. We have supported all the parties in the rural villages. And then the question, Chair, which you are raising once again, you are saying you don't believe that we have addressed it. You are saying, how have we made a contribution to the economy in South Africa? So our impact assessment in the economy, I had to go back to my economics 101 notes and think, so when you make an impact in the economy, or you can gladly say that you've made a contribution of so much towards the economic growth of the country, what would be the indicator? So I went back to my economics 101 notes, they would state here, because I've covered this, but I want to contextualize the discussion. So how do you measure the GDP in the country? You'll say it's your consumption plus investment plus in your equation plus, in inverted commas, your exports minus exports plus your government expenditure. So if you wanted to find out about our role, we're not affected by any of those variables. The one that would impact directly on the NEF would be investment in that equation. In my whole presentation, I'm talking about investment. In my whole presentation, I can go back to that slide number 9. It contextualizes our impact in the economy. Let's go back to it. It talks about the life-to-date performance milestones, where we're saying we have approved 839 transactions that are worth 8.5 billion, dispersed 5.6 billion, created in excess of 89,000 jobs. It looks at how we have empowered ordinary people through our NEF retail offer, the Asong Chef Scheme, where we sold a small percentage to more than 87,000 black beneficiaries in South Africa. Imagine if we were to find a lot of these companies where we could come up with retail offers in South Africa. If you look at the beneficiaries of NEF Asonge, it would be people from the mines, you know, nurses, townships, rural villages who bought our shares, the investor education programs, our presence in the regional offices. It talks about our sectoral focus, the types of sectors the NEF has invested in. So I was trying to understand the question. When we say impact in the economy, I thought the whole discussion and presentation, it's about informing the honorable members about the kind of impact that we have made in the economy. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to take a quick second round. I notice Honorable Lond, Honorable Mukwebu, Honorable... Let me do it in this way. Honorable Lond is from the Western Cape. Honorable Mukwebu is also from the Eastern Cape, like Honorable Hai. Then we have Honorable Chababu from the Free State. And then the last one that we'll have is Honorable Dikgale, who's from Limpopo. And we're trying to finish within 5 minutes. We have a meeting of chairpersons. Honorable Lont.
Honorable Chair, I'm not Honorable Lont. I'm Fosi Makwebo, but I've spoken to Honorable Lont to swap quickly with your permission. Can I do that? Now, you know, I think context is important. Before I ask these questions, I just want to, you know, to put the context right. You know, with all good intents and purposes, and from your presentation, you know, I noticed that a lot of public fund, you know, in billions has, you know, moved and exchanged hands. Beneficiaries, people who are benefiting from, you know, what you are doing given your mandate. And I take that to heart. But I am worried because if you look today, I think it's on public record and everybody knows this, that South Africa is losing 24.6 billion per annum of public funds on fraud and corruption. For the last 20 years, we have lost a whopping 700 billion just on fraud and corruption. Now, the question is that people are asking, and all South Africans want to ask, where did this money go to? Black industrialists, who are they? Who are these companies? Don't just give us figures, Wusim. 700 black companies in this period have been assisted because people want to know, let's unveil the corporate veil. Tell us what are these companies so that we can know who are the people who are owning these companies because, truth be told, whether we like it or not, there's a notion today in our life and in our times that where some people, you know, in George Orwell's words, to borrow from them, become more black than others because they are politically connected in the, or connected to those, the powers that be in those institutions or in the political realm. Now, let's look at what we have done quickly. Page 6, you had the 160 graduates. The question that the people of the Eastern Cape will be asking me, who are these people? Page 9, 5.6 billion has been dispersed to the companies since inception. Who are these companies? We want to know, let's unveil the corporate veil and find out who are these companies so that we can know, because everything that is done in government must be done in a manner that is fair and transparent. So I don't have that information now. I request for the particulars. And I can go on and say, you know, Asonga shares, that's good. We reached 30,000 people in villages. And where are those villages? Okay, you told us you couldn't put, you know, a full presentation on this. And lastly, the question of on slide number 11, black women empowerment. Women of the Eastern Cape, I have to go back and report it to them and to our constituencies. You didn't meet your very own target. 45%, you've done 30%. Now the question is why? And yeah, in the interest of time, Chairperson, I won't go too many, but I just want to say the billions that have exchanged hands from you, give us more. I would want to know more. What are the owners of these companies? I would want to know more the beneficiaries of these farms. Who are those communities? Because we need to be fair and be transparent about these issues. No one stands against black industrialists. In fact, I'm the last one to stand against it because I'm black. But the question is, you know, who are these people? Thank you.
Yes, Chairperson. Chair, just a side note, you gave him 10 minutes to answer earlier and he took almost half an hour, which took away from our time. So I trust we will in future correct that or you will cut them short with unnecessary or extra comments that could be done in a shorter period. Chairperson, on page 37 or slide 37 and also there's another one, but I mean, they've listed the name of the farms, the province, the beneficiaries, the amount, and the industry. I don't know if it would be possible in future, because this money now goes from the national purse, being spent, and then the land stays in the hands of government. But now we need to see whether those farms are actually operational, getting money in. And on a year-to-year, we should be able to see when this purchase or these offers were made, what was the annual turnover of the farms? And then maybe a year from them, again, what is the turnover? And again, what is the turnover? So that we can actually compare when the department comes to the portfolio, or any department comes to the portfolio committee, we can see whether there's actually been progress on those farms or not. Okay, that's just quickly on that. The page 58, which was touched on. I don't know over what period this was covered, but you quickly said you attendees was over 30,000. I had a quick count, and then the gentleman at the end said there's even more venues and I don't know what you want to call it, the campaign events. The attendance doesn't seem very, very high. If you have a quick count, there's almost 100 events that were held, only indicated here. 30,000, that's about 300 per event. Now, is that only in 1 year, or is that over 2, 3, or 4 years period? Because as soon as it spreads over a longer period of time, then actually your outreach in this is not very, very good. And you say you don't have the capacity. You said something about 160. So if 160 people is doing this outreach, you've only reached 300 per event. At the end of the day, if you do the math, it's a very, very low reach that you have in this. Then just one thing, that Solomon's Delta that you indicated, that's not in the Eastern Cape as far as I know.
It's in the Western Cape.
Yes, it's in the Western Cape. Yeah, I just saw you indicated there on your thing, and that wasn't, I think, initiated by yourself. That was actually initiated by the owners themselves together with the workers, and that thing has been coming on for a while now. And my other concern is you list all the successes that you've got here. I would like to know, at a future stage, when did you start this? When was it completed? Because those successes can span a 5, 6, 7, 8 year period of time. I want to know what's being done going forward. Chairperson, I know some of these things will probably not be answered now, but I mean, I think if we can actually make those notes and get that information at the next meeting, or even if they can submit it to us in writing, that would be great. The bridging funding that you touched on, I don't know if I missed it, but I mean, what's the bridging funding that you're looking at in order to get the NEF, I think, fall under the IDC that you said? You mentioned that you need funding, but you didn't say exactly what amount you're looking for. You said you applied for that as well. And then something that you touched on is, again, the students giving them the bursaries and the opportunities to go to varsity, which is good. I assume that those students are then being pulled back into the departments or being placed. But also, one of the things that I would like to know, and this is sometimes something that even big corporations, when they have a education fund, a lot of the kids drop out, especially kids that come from areas that they don't necessarily have the support structure away from home. It's always interesting for me to find out what is the completion rate of those bursaries that you give, and if there's problems, how do you identify it early enough to give the necessary support so that they can actually finish the courses? And if they do that, not then completed, what is being done to fill up that gap of the money that is, I don't want to say money being lost, but if somebody's not completing a course, then there's surplus funds that can be reallocated. Just sorry, that's a lot, but I mean, we're supposed to be able to get more chance to ask these questions, so I'll leave it up to you how you want to handle this.
Okay, I will pronounce on that just now. Honorable Chabango.
Thank you, Chairperson. Most of my questions have been stolen by the man who is seated on my left, the honorable member. But anyway, let me reiterate the fact that the criteria that is used in order to pick up a student who goes to overseas, I think it must be changed, because it advantages those that are intelligent only. I would like to know about the tangible black interpreters that we have empowered, especially coming from Malutia Pofung, where the former president, a mad that area as a loan. Then three, we've got the, where I come from, I'm also a farm boy, a traditional council of Bakwen. How is it empowered? Because really, we've got the kingdom by the name of Kim Mubedi. He has nothing to offer to the community, whereas the council has come with PWPs and all that. So if he could be, or the Bakwena traditional leaders could be empowered, it would be of utmost importance. And lastly, when you look at the black farmers from Free State, in the Eastern Free State, they sort of lease their land to the white counterparts because they don't have equipment to till the land. How are you going to help them in order to give them utensils to till the land so that they cannot lease the land illegally to their counterparts? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tikhale.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me join my colleagues in welcoming the presentation. And I am really covered, Mama, in many questions, but I want to just take you back to the portfolio by value per province, the one on page 49, whereby the two provinces are not doing well when it comes to this type of deals. I just want to check, how do you normally plan to help them so that they understand? Because the people who end up getting help is the members of our community on the ground. I wanted to take you back on that one. And the other one on page 60, that deals with women empowerment. I see the women are being empowered here, but I don't know if ever Limpopo is part of this. Just want to check on that one. And the other one, we are going to Free State on the program of taking Parliament to the people. I want to check if ever, yeah, my colleague is happy because it is his province. I want to check also how you do help the Department of Health, because our focus is going to be on health issues. The others have been covered, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm in trouble. Rules allow us that if we do run out of time, we are free to request, because it's diplomatic. The department reporting to us to give us the responses in writing. I would want to make that request to you on the last round of questions, that you please give it to us in writing. The other rule also says to us that if we are dealing with a question that has a lot of data, statistics in it, it's only fair to then say, go and collate that data so that you can share with us something that has been authentically tested and verified. I listen to the question of Honorable Mokwebo. It's a very important question. But then also a third thing that comes to mind is, you see, the Department of Trade and Industry, we don't have that problem with the people there at the campus, because Saroj sent us 5 emails every day, not of what she's doing, but what the department is doing, what the minister is engaged in. And therefore, we don't have to raise those questions here about how many industrial development zones do you have, what are you doing on that one, because we've received the information. Maybe CEO, to request what I'm going to do with everybody that reports to this committee, is to say two things. The one, when you have something, any event happening in the country, or maybe also internationally, but particularly in the country, just alert us, so via email, so that we know. And you could check with the Roj whether you could use her or MZ to do that for us. The second element, I'm going to allow you to speak. The second element is also that if you want to share anything that you think is important for the select committee, not to hesitate, but to share that with us via email. Let us complain that you are giving us too much information, but not sit in a meeting where we say we don't have the information. Please, over to you, CEO.
Thank you very much, Chair. I won't go through each and every question, but there are some burning issues that I wanted to...
I'm not going to allow that.
Just one.
I will allow you one.
One.
Because the agreement is that you will give us in writing.
I will send it in writing.
Thank you very much.
Is the issue around corruption in South Africa and the fact that we've been losing billions as a result of this corruption, that let's unveil the corporate veil, who are these beneficiaries? We talk about black industrialists, you know, who are these people? So, Chair, I was just sharing with the honourable members this information that we used to get this question all the time from the Portfolio Committee of Trade and Industry. So what I then said to the chairperson is that, you know what, Chair, because I've been getting this question for a long time, why don't we organise a site visit? The first thing we did was to prepare a list of all our investments on a sectoral basis, value, so that, Chair, you can even get tomorrow. It's a list of all our investments. It will have the sector, it will have the name of the investment, it will have the province, and it will have the name of the shareholders and beneficiaries. So that is available. But we then went further to say, let's do site visits, you know. And I have to say that it's been a very exciting experience for the portfolio committee. So we went Eastern Cape. You must choose. You must just tell us. You pick on an investment. You say, CEO, please release your representatives from the NEF. We want to go there as the committee to actually go and see and experience, you know, what you guys always come here and talk about. So we'll be very open, Chair, to...
Company?
Yeah, we'll send your full
list. Full list tomorrow.
Yeah.
The names of the beneficiaries, the sector, the amounts that we invested, and all that information is ready. It went to the Trade and Industry Portfolio Committee. Thanks.
Thank you very much, CEO, and thank you for accommodating our request to send us these things in writing. The presentation, as you could have sensed, was very appreciated. There are a lot of issues that you are doing that we would want to make sure they are done appropriately. Honourable Lont, I want to allow you to speak. Martin, why are you raising your hand? Can I request your indulgence just after Honourable Lond has spoken? Not more than 2 minutes. I'm going to ask you as well. Thank you very much to you and your team, to the members of the board. And we are trusting, we are hopeful, we have confidence that the processes about your new positioning would run smoothly so that it doesn't have any adverse influence on the wonderful work that you are doing. But stay with us just for 2 minutes, please. Honourable Lond.
Thank you, Chair. Just, I trust that as the committee secretary, one of the officials that's assisting the committee made note of those last round of questions so that when we do get all the responses, doesn't have to come back to us, and then we pick up that some of the questions weren't answered, that will be checked even before it gets sent through to us as a committee that all the questions are answered.
Sure. Honourable members, just in closure, two things about the oversight. I have requested that the secretaries speak, Shupeka and Grace, speak to the departments and ask the departments what is it that they feel is important. So what you're saying now about the oversight, if we say we're going to this area, then you can tell us what are the projects in that area that we need to visit. That has apparently not happened. But we are hamstrung by a bigger problem, which is identification of where do we go to in Mpumalanga. But we were waiting on that. Where are we going to cooperate? You see? That's the communication background. So he's given it to Tupeka. Tupeka never gave it through to Grace. Give us the area again, please. Sorry? No. You have it just because of our time, if you wouldn't mind. If you wouldn't mind sharing it with Grace so that she also has it. But send it to all of us in writing through your secretary. So the areas that we're going to go through, that has been sorted out. Our two chairs, Honorable Khaya and myself, will work on this to make sure that when we come by next week, Wednesday, we have something more substantive to share with you. Okay. We're not meeting next week, Tuesday. Oh, we are meeting Tuesday. Okay, that's the one thing. Last aspect, honorable members, we have the minutes of the meeting of last week, the 8th of February. I have browsed through the minutes. I just want to make one minor alteration. On page 2, there on top, where we have Mr. S. Maputi, he's not communications officer. I'll just have that corrected. Otherwise, the minutes is a true reflection of our meeting. Just the issues that we need to look at normally is item 3, the committee comments and deliberations. The committee welcomed the briefing of the annual report and congratulated SA Tourism on the unqualified audit opinion received. The progress made by SA Tourism was unanimously appreciated by the committee. No breakdown of this conversation. And then we adopted the minutes of the last meeting. Can I have a proposal for the acceptance of this? Honorable Dikhale? Thank you. Some. That's a different matter, it's not related to the minutes. Okay. Seconded by Honorable Lawn. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. The meeting is... Yes, sir? Honorable Khai, we don't want to go back to that.
No, it's just because when they leave, they must know that this week we're going to take care of the point that she raised, because we might not see them in the near future. The issue of recapitalization. She was saying that as committee members, we also have a responsibility to assist the NEF with regard to the issue of the recapitalization. But I'm saying that it's a matter that we should take up as members in various platforms that are available in Parliament. So I just wanted them to live with that understanding.
Minuted. Yeah. It's noted but not minuted. What do you mean? I'm not completely with you. And we can buy it from him. No, you can't bring it to my office and our secretary of the committee. Zolisa? Can you help with that? Okay. Zoliso is my PA. She will make sure that she gets it from you, and then she'll work with Martins in terms of the distribution. But we will only give it to the members that were in the meeting today. Sorry, Honorable Father. Honorable, hey, there's only one member that's not yet.
Yes,